Welcome to episode 4 of How to Win with Patents and IP. This is Jackie Hutter coming to you from the worldwide headquarters of the Hutter Group in beautiful Decatur, Georgia. If you have listened to other episodes in this series, you will already know that in this podcast, I will be sharing with listeners my almost 25 years of experience in the intellectual property business as an IP litigator, patent prosecutor, licensing expert, and CEO of a startup technology company. From this multifaceted framework of experience, I have generated repeatable tools and techniques that have allowed my clients to consistently generate patents and other types of IP that meaningfully moves the needle on their business value. Before I get started on this episode, where we'll talk about the absence of accountability in the IP profession today in regards to the value created for clients, I first need to do a bit of housekeeping. The views expressed in this podcast are mine as a commentator on IP strategy and value creation using patents and IP, and nothing in this podcast series constitutes legal advice. While I have been able to use these tools and techniques consistently for my clients over the years, your mileage may vary, especially if you choose an IP team that has not been trained in a business-focused approach to patents and IP value creation. Moreover, any entrepreneur, innovator, or business person seeking to deploy the methodologies that I discuss in this podcast must be prepared to closely manage their IP teams to ensure that their IP strategies that they identified are in fact being applied by their external IP teams. Now let's get started to talk about accountability, or actually the lack thereof, in the patent world today, and what we can do to make things better, to make people more accountable across the board. Anyone who's listened to the previous episodes in this podcast series may think that I'm starting to sound like a broken record when I say that only 5% of patents are found to be strategic. That is, only 5%, or maybe even fewer for many companies, of patents have been determined to create strategic value for the company that obtains them. So why is it that we don't hold the patent profession accountable for doing a better job? Why don't we ask the people that we are hiring to do our work for us how many times they have gotten patents in the past and how many of those actually created value for their clients? I was never asked that when I was a law firm lawyer, I can tell you that. Maybe it's because we trust the profession. We trust the expertise of the person we're hiring. Well, last year, my husband was found to have cancer. Don't worry, he's fine now. We caught it early. And in the first meeting with the doctor who ended up doing my husband's surgery, we asked him, what is your success rate for this surgery? And in 5 years, how many people are still alive who have had this surgery? And this doctor knew his numbers. He knew not just how many people made it through the surgery, but also what the longevity of people who were under his care were in 5 years. Now, he was an expert. I knew nothing about the surgery, nor did my husband. But we nonetheless asked him about how successful he was at doing the surgery. And the doctor was ready for that question. Did I trust the expertise of this doctor? You betcha. We did extensive research on this doctor and his credentials and knew that he had the right background to do the surgery for my husband. However, you just can't trust that somebody is who they say they are and can do what they say they can do. You have to verify that. And to verify that, we put the doctor on the spot and asked him what his success rate was. So why don't we do this with the patent profession? Before we hire someone to handle our critical IP and patent needs, why don't we first ask them how often they are successful? And I have to tell you, I really don't have an answer for you. I was never asked that question. And because I was never asked that question as a law firm lawyer, I didn't pay attention, and I couldn't have answered the question. Sure, I knew generally how long it took me to get something through the patent office or how much something cost for a client. As a supervisor, I could look at other people's work and generally see whether or not they were efficient in doing their work, they were doing the work correctly, and if the person needed help or additional training, I could make that happen for them so they could get better. And if they didn't get better, I might actually just let them go. But those kind of people-specific metrics were incentivized by my role and responsibility as the owner of a law firm. Of course, clients cared about how much we were charging them to get their patent matter through the patent office. And so we kept track of the time it took for us to do that, because if it took us too much time to get something done, it followed that we may not get paid for some of the time we expended. But at the end of the day, there was no way for the client to hold me accountable for getting their matter through the patent office successfully. If a patent didn't issue, well, the damage pretty much done been did, and we really couldn't go back to fix it. I guess you could say that the client could hold me accountable by not hiring me again, but I already got paid. So as long as clients kept coming in the door and hiring my firm to get patents for them, it was no harm, no foul, because nobody ever really knew whether we were effective in our jobs or not. The lack of accountability in the patent profession, nonetheless, should not be placed solely on the shoulders of patent attorneys. Rather, clients typically do not know why they're getting a patent in the first place. They just think it's a good idea, or other folks have told them to do it, or it's just a habit for some companies. And maybe it doesn't matter at all whether they get a patent or not, other than the fact that they could have been spending the money likely on other areas that created more value. But as you may have heard me say before, patents and IP rarely matters, but when it matters a lot. And patents and IP always matter when we're talking about an innovator that is bringing new technology or product solutions to a customer to solve long unmet needs. If you are creating a value proposition for the customer for which the customer will pay, and there's enough customers available that your competitors will come in and try to serve those same customers, one of the few ways that you can generate a guaranteed return on your innovation investment is to get patents and IP that protect that customer value proposition. The generation of strategically valuable patents and IP must be very high on your list of to-do items. It follows that to be successful in generating strategically valuable patents and IP, both the patent team and the business team have to be accountable for a successful result. But how does a business person pick the right patent team to get this done? If the most sophisticated patent filing companies in the world could only get patents strategically right 5% of the time, it must be like finding a needle in a haystack for a business person who is a non-expert in IP strategy to find a patent professional who can be effective in generating their own strategic patents. And unlike a lot of things today, it's not possible to use data analysis to determine who is the right patent professional for you out of the large number of patent professionals who want your work. To this end, I recently co-authored a journal article where I and another person tried to collect and analyze data about licensed U.S. patent professionals to determine whether we could see differences in the efficiency, in the effectiveness of a group of patent attorneys. And it turned out we could, meaning that a business person who needs to get valuable patents for their business is pretty much on her own. Unless, of course, she has engaged another expert to do the analysis and help her vet and select the expert. I'll note here that this is exactly what my role and responsibility was when I was a senior IP and innovation counsel at a large consumer products and chemical corporation. Until I left the law firm and went in-house, there was no way for me to objectively review a large amount of work done by others in the profession. At least because there was no incentive for me to do that. I and the other patent attorneys at my law firm were excellent attorneys. We knew that, and there was no reason for us to think any differently. Certainly, we would never be in a position to vet and select the skill set of an attorney for the purpose of sending them our business because we actually did the business. When I got to the in-house setting, it quickly became apparent that there was a huge difference between the quality of legal practice, not just between firms, but among firms. As that person who was held accountable, not just for the hours I billed, but for the quality of work that I and my outside counsel obtained, I began to look differently at my peers in the patent profession. In other words, because I was held accountable now, I expected those that I was hiring to do my work to also feel that same accountability. And I have to be quite honest with you, there are a lot of people that do not want to be accountable. In one example, I was hired by a small medical device manufacturer. They had been expending huge sums of money year over year with this law firm. And as it often happens, one day they basically woke up and said, "Why are we spending all this money? We don't seem to be getting anything from this." They hired me to provide them with a second opinion as to whether they were really getting value from their large IP spend and also to help them manage their portfolio over the long term. Even with a very quick high-level overview of this client's portfolio, I could see that this law firm was giving this client very little, if any, value. Moreover, they were really bad at what they were doing. It took an average of 6 years for a single patent to get through the patent office with this client's portfolio. Now, in my entire career, I don't think it's ever taken me 6 years to get a single patent through the patent office. So this, quite frankly, looked rather bananas to me. But remember, the client was hiring the patent lawyer for his expertise. What was he to know whether or not it was supposed to take 6 years to get something through the patent office or not? When I ran some simple numbers, it was apparent that the average time that it took to get a patent out of this part of the patent office was about 2.5 to 3 years. And I immediately told the client that I thought there was something wrong and that we needed to work to fix it to get a better result from his patent attorneys. Now, the client had no intention to fire this law firm when they brought me on. Rather, they wanted me to help them manage their portfolio because it had gotten out of hand. When I confronted the managing partner of this very prestigious and well-known law firm about the problems that I saw in the portfolio, which I brought up at the request of our mutual client and for their benefit, the managing partner literally shouted at me and called me names. It turned out that my looking under the hood of this client's portfolio was very threatening to this established law firm, if only because they were not used to experts looking at their work. In other words, they were not used to being held accountable. It wouldn't surprise you to find out that we ended up firing this law firm after a while, and when I did an audit of the bills, I found that this law firm was vastly overbilling my client for the last several years. So it's not surprising they didn't want to be found out.
In another case,
a client in the chemical business hired a law firm who assigned electrical engineer to their patent matters. Ethically, this patent attorney should not have taken the case, if only because it was clear from the work that he did that if he had had any chemistry, it had not happened since high school, because the patent application was wholly unintelligible and had been rejected several times by the patent examiner. The application matter was important to the client's business, and she was getting increasingly frustrated with the difficulty in getting this through the patent office. Her gut was telling her something was wrong with the process, but she was not the expert and she didn't really know. One of her acquaintances referred her to me when she expressed her frustration, and sure enough, the client's gut was right. The patent application was a total mess, and even I, with my high level of chemical expertise, could not fix the problem and the application had to be abandoned. In this case, there was an accountability moment. However, that accountability moment was after the fact, that is, after the damage done been did, because we transferred all that client's matters to another law firm, but the client paid a lot of money for a patent application that never issued, and now they have no protection for an important innovation that they brought to market. In other words, this client didn't even end up with a worthless patent. They end up with marketplace exposure because they had nothing to protect them. And in another situation that happened recently, I had to tell a client that his medical device innovation that he patented several years ago, in fact, did not cover the product functionality that he had instructed his patent attorney to get. When I have to come in and give second opinions like this, it's never fun, because not only do I have to tell the client that they do not have the ability to capture the value from their patents that they thought they did, which is a business reality. In most cases, the client is also disappointed in themselves for allowing the patent attorney to take their money and get them nothing in return. And in this, as well as most other cases where I have to come in and give bad news as a second opinion, there is nothing that can be done after the fact. I could probably go on for hours about the times where I had to tell clients that their patent attorneys had done a poor job in creating business value for them, even while the patent attorney had made no legal errors and had acted professionally appropriate in getting those patents for them. In other words, the client had no legal recourse against their patent attorney because the patent attorney had acted in a legally appropriate and professional manner. If you get nothing else from this podcast episode, I want you to be able to take away the concept that it's not your patent professional's job to get you a valuable patent. It is your patent professional's job to get you a patent. Your patent professional is no more than your scribe, your mouthpiece, your communicator to the patent office. If you don't know what you need to own in order to capture business value from the money and time you spend to generate the patent protection, too bad, so sad, it's your fault, you can't blame anybody else. While this may sound harsh, it is in fact the truth. And the sooner we all get in front of the truth, the better we're going to be able to change the system as it exists today. But given the disconnect between the expectations of most clients and the professional responsibilities of those on the patent side of things, is there any wonder why so many patents in the world are worth zero to the client at the end of the day? But we can change this. We can ask for accountability. And let me be the first to do so. In the last 5 years, 90% of the patents that I have helped my clients draft and file to protect their innovations have issued. Many of these have been allowed in less than a year. And I know there may be people thinking, well, those patents must have been very narrow if they issued that quickly, because that must mean that the patent examiner had very little pushback to what my clients were trying to claim. And if you thought this, you would be wrong. Every single one of these patent applications was designed out of the gate to not just be allowable, but to be allowable to cover broad claims that were meaningful to my client's business proposition. Of course, this required us to do the work on the front end to design the application such that we would get the desired business outcome. But importantly, before we filed the patent application, for each of these clients, we knew what the prior art looked like and what we were entitled in view of the prior art. And we also gave the patent examiner a roadmap to allow the case. We also drafted the claims to preserve our optionality such that when the patent examiner examined the claims in view of prior art that we may not have seen specifically, but we knew about in general, we had backup claims that were non-limiting to us that we wouldn't have cared about if we had led with those claims. This is the very definition of strategy. Strategy is defining an endpoint and developing a plan to get there. Each patent application that I assist clients in drafting is developed with a goal in mind, that is, a desired business outcome. Some of my clients may be looking to enhance their valuations so that they can increase their investment or obtain a higher exit value. Other clients may be seeking to license their patent rights to an incumbent company, and yet other clients may be seeking to sell an innovation in the marketplace, and they don't want others to be able to come in behind them and solve the same customer problem. Moreover, each of these patent applications are drafted to preserve the optionality that you need to have as the market develops. For example, a company I've represented for several years is developing breakthrough innovations in the construction technology space. Not only is their technology disruptive, the space itself is disrupting. So there's a lot of uncertainty there, not just in the way technology will go, but in the way the marketplace will evolve going forward. And because we're patenting to enhance our ability to generate revenue or exit value in the future, we're not patenting our past. We're not patenting what we're inventing. We're seeing how our technology may be deployed in the future, even though we may not in fact be doing that today. And this strategy has paid off for this client. Several years ago, we prepared a very robust patent application on a particular innovation that we were working on at the time. Before we finalized the application for filing, I asked my client's technical and business teams if this market that we're working in now is not validated and we end up pivoting in another direction, what might we want to own in 3 years? And as a result of this question, we included subject matter in the application that we had no intention to do at that time. But fast forward to a couple of years, and it turns out that was the way the market developed, and we pivoted in that direction, and we ended up having a priority date, that is patent coverage, that was way ahead of what anybody else was thinking about. Because everybody else was patenting their past, what they invented, whereas we were seeking to patent our future. So now this company is sitting with patent protection in the marketplace, and the incumbents do not have that same patent protection. Now, if we had ended up only with patent protection that covered something we were doing 3 years ago that wasn't even relevant to the market as it existed today, would I have been blamed as a patent attorney? Of course not. It wasn't my job to predict the future technology and business for this client as a patent attorney. However, since I view my role as a strategist, that is to help my clients protect the future, I view my role as needing to be accountable to make sure that my clients do the best that they possibly can do to generate value that protects their future. And this is why 90% of the patents that I have filed in the last 5 years have issued with the claims that the client needed to create business value. Certainly, I am not perfect. there have been those 10% roughly of patents that we have not been able to get out of the patent office. Notably, each of those patent applications is still pending. They're just stuck in the patent office. Most patent professionals wouldn't think that's a failure. They would think that they're still working to get them out of the office. But for each of these clients, because our intended business outcome was to obtain patent coverage to a particular innovation within a set period of time, the fact that those patent applications did not meet that objective, I view as a failure. In other words, I am accountable for that result. And I feel that lack of success to achieve that desired business outcome acutely. We're still pushing to get those allowed, and importantly, for each of these patent applications that I refer to, the reasons that they have not been allowed is because the examiner has been the wild card in the process. What's interesting to me here is that I can actually point to the fact that it's the examiner and the patent office that have created the roadblock to issuance, and we can manage the upcoming process accordingly. In other words, by managing our risks from the patent application design and drafting process, we can control the variables and manage the risk of the patent filing process. And from this, it should be apparent how I'm able to have confidence in my ability to get my clients' patent applications quickly and at relatively low cost without compromising the scope and content that they need to generate in order to capture the value of the innovation that they're bringing to their customers. Some of you might remember an old commercial for, I believe it was Shell Oil. And this was back in the old days when gas stations actually had repair shops. And the Shell Oil ad was, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. With the inference being that if you don't do the preventive maintenance, it's going to cost you a lot more to have your car serviced or fixed. And that's the case here. We do the work on the front end to ensure that our patent application is designed not just for allowance, but for a desired business outcome. And because we do that work, I can be accountable to my client for my results because I know we've done the work. In other words, when you take a strategic approach to patents, the process doesn't depend, it is planned. Importantly, I want to be fair here. I don't do this on my own. In order to work effectively in this process, a client has to give me the time of its business and technical teams. And if they do not, I cannot be successful for them, and therefore I will not take them on as a client. Truthfully, a lot of business people don't want to get involved in the patent process. And because I can't be successful in such a case, I'll have to decline to take the client on. Also, I work with very effective outside counsel to help me get this done. What I've found over the years is that two people who are highly skilled with complementary skill sets, who are aligned to the same goal, will make a much better work product, will get a much better result than a person with a single skill set working alone. In other words, collaboration between the client, myself, and outside counsel is mandatory in order to be effective. And I will not be accountable unless I can know that I can be effective. As I told a new client yesterday, I know this case will allow with very broad claims if we do it this way. But I only had confidence in saying that after working with this client for several hours and reviewing the prior art both with him and independently of him. Importantly, however, I did not review this prior art until I knew what the full business opportunity was for the work that he was doing on his innovation. This has been a very fun project because this client has obtained many patents over his career as the global head of innovation for a consumer hardware company. He has worked with traditional patent attorneys who have told him no more often than they've told him yes. So there's been a lot of retraining and friction in the process, and I have not been able to bill for all the time that I have spent, as is often the case when I'm first onboarding a person to this process, especially someone who's done it in the traditional manner for many years. In other words, they have to unlearn the bad habits. Now that this client gets what we're trying to do and how it differs from how he was instructed to generate patent protection in the past, he now sees the full opportunity that his company has to own a large swath of an emerging market where the products and technology, as they will land on the customer, are not even known as of now. While we cannot predict how the customer or customer sets might respond to this innovation when they actually have it in their hands, we can preserve our optionality to generate patent protection to multiple customer value propositions that may inevitably result from his innovation insight. Moreover, by taking the front-end time to look at the full scope of the opportunities available to us, instead of just patenting the invention that he brought to me several weeks ago, we are now enabling ourselves to do the work on the front end so that we don't have to worry as much about the back end. Yes, it's more work. It costs a little bit more money on the front end. However, it saves us a lot of work on the back end because we're not fighting with the patent examiner because we've effectively given the patent examiner a reason to say yes to us. This is the fundamental reason why my team, that is my clients, my outside counsel, and myself, are able to allow our clients to generate patent protection as a business strategy and not a hope. Because as the old saying goes, hope is not a strategy. Before listeners get excited about hiring my team to generate patent protection for you, where the outcome can be almost guaranteed, I need to make it clear that I am able to run the table because I stack the deck. I will only take clients on who are willing to do the work on the front end to get the desired result on the back end. I only take clients who can demonstrate to me that they have validated a customer, that they have established a business model, or I can help them identify those business models for protection, and that are willing to do the hard work of helping me help them be successful. If somebody just wants to hire me and tell me to do the work for them, it ain't gonna happen. And I only work with outside counsel who are willing to do the work with me. If an outside counsel is not willing to collaborate in order to get the best result for our mutual client, I won't work with them. You know, but there's nothing magical about what I'm doing here. As an outsourced IP strategist for a number of companies instead of just one, I'm an in-house strategic IP counsel. I'm doing exactly what I did when I was a senior IP and innovation counsel at a consumer products and chemical company, where my job was to make sure that the innovations that our company brought to our customers and for which our customers would pay were protected so that our competitors could not jump in and steal our customers on the backs of our innovation investment. I should note that some folks might be thinking that this is double the cost of the existing model, and that's not the case. Actually, my clients tend to pay much less for their patent applications, especially when you look at the value that's created for them from a business perspective. But if you're thinking about cost and how it aligns with your patenting efforts, then you're not even thinking about business value created from your patenting efforts. And this is not the appropriate approach for you. Just keep doing what you're doing, and maybe you'll be an owner of one of those 5% of patents that actually end up creating strategic value for their owners. In the meantime, I'll keep doing what I'm doing with my team and keep shooting for the 100% goal. Well, we've reached the end of this episode of How to Win with Patents and IP. I hope it's now clear that winning with patents and IP means that you have to first set a business goal and develop a plan to get there. We'll talk about this a lot more in future episodes. If you're in a hurry to jumpstart your knowledge in this regard, please feel free to go over to my IP Asset Maximizer blog at thehuttergroup.com, where I've been talking about patents and IP strategy and related topics since 2008. I look forward to continuing to share my insights with you. And if you have any questions, please reach out to me at jackie@huttergroup.com. See you next time.